With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
If he starts making more contact with what he's doing everywhere else, he's going to have just stupid numbers.
If you can go 6-6 while everything's on fire, I mean, hey, if things turn around, you could definitely put a winning streak in there.
Yeah, I'm typing with one hand because I'm holding a microwave. A microwave? Microphone.
Josh is very strong. And welcome to episode number 200 of Artificial Turf Wars, where we're attempting to prove that if you do something 200 times, you need not become all that much better at it. I am your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined by the ever-vigilant Joshua Howsam. Josh, how are you doing tonight?
I think you nailed it there. I'm good, though.
Okay, so enough patting ourselves on the back. Blue Jays news, which is mostly everyone is hurt. I think that's, we got this is just in 1 week. Merriweather, Stripling, Chatwood, Romano all went on the injured list, and Teoscar Hernandez got the COVID. Perfect.
Yeah, it's, and this is to join Hatch, Pearson, Springer. Guys, they're already out. It's just like, my God, like, it's crazy.
Wait until we play. Wait until we do an inter squad game between the hurt guys and the not hurt guys, and we see who wins. There are other topics though. Vlad and Bo know what's up with at the plate and in the field, largely with a couple of hiccups. The rest of the offense, not so much. However, Mats, Ryu looking good. Robbie Ray back in on the saddle again. In the saddle, on the saddle. I don't know. Roark is a bullpen pitcher. And we get to meet up close and personal Josh Palacios, Joel Payamps, Anthony Castro, and I guess re-meet Anthony K tonight, starting because there's nobody else. Anthony K. Yeah. Oh my goodness. We do have a gold star for one of the players I personally feel close to, so I'm going to give him a gold star. And yeah, that'll round it out, I think. By the time we get there, we will probably have said something deep and meaningful about something. So, okay.
Yeah, good one. Like 200 episodes to do it for the first time.
Just so everybody knows, I said to Josh, after 199 episodes, we should switch and he should do the hosting and introing. And he laughed and he said, no, it's after 200 episodes. So next week, Josh will be doing the hosting.
It's like the whole century or decade ending kind of thing, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not really like I have to do the whole 200. I misunderstood how that worked. Julian Merriweather. So it started as a hip impingement, and now I heard it's an oblique strain.
Yep.
Nobody wants the obliques to be hurt.
Yeah. There's been no report on the severity of the oblique strain, because obviously that can be grade 1 to grade 3, and grade 3 means you're like done for months. But it's not good. I mean, it's Merriweather was the star of the bullpen, and we'll get to why he was the star and not someone else in a minute. But like, he came in, he pitched, he threw two pitches, and the second one was a wild pitch, but they picked the runner off on the wild pitch.
It was amazing, by the way.
Yeah, and they didn't come out for the ninth, and you know they'd taken a 4-run lead, so it's just like, well, they could have in a day game the following day. So I was like, well, maybe they're just taking him out because this way he can pitch tomorrow as well. And then, no, he's hurt again.
Yeah, sometimes the worst case scenario is the thing. As Merriweather, now again, we're at oblique, which is usually a long recovery period. But on the flip side, nobody's ever, I don't think, had surgery for an oblique strain.
No, it does not seem to be something that requires some kind of surgical procedure. So I guess that's good.
Yeah, maybe. I think I'll go to Romano next, because I was saying to you just prior to the podcast that I think we all expected Romano to be the, you know, the star of the bullpen. And he had a lot of trouble, in my mind anyway, he had a lot of trouble finding the strike zone consistently to get into those situations where he could really wipe guys out with his slider. But now he is hurt with.
So it was listed as right ulnar neuritis, which, so Ty Berry on Twitter at TyBerry3 said it was kind of in his medical wheelhouse. So he said this: ulnar neuritis is kind of an outdated term, but presuming they're using it interchangeably with ulnar neuropathy at the elbow, there's a pretty wide range of severity and outcomes. It could be anything from sleep with your arm straighter and see what happens to you need surgery. So we don't really know much about it. But obviously it could be really bad and it could be okay. So this is definitely we have to learn a little bit more about it.
Now here we have an actual arm injury as opposed to an oblique injury. So that always is to me a bigger alarm bell. Did you think Romano was really in form anyway? Like I think he was, last time I saw his velocity was about 96, which is not where Jordan Romano wants to be.
Yeah, I mean, he was still hitting 97, 98. So, like, I obviously he has hit 100 and sat around 98, 99. But he, I mean, just mechanically, he didn't look very good. And it turns out it was his elbow. I didn't think it was his elbow. I thought he was just sort of, his legs were off. But, yeah, I mean, he didn't look right. His slider looked different. It had a little different shape to it than last year. I mean, that can just happen. But he, turns out there was a reason for it.
I have had the misfortune of listening to Buck and Pat and such, of course, during the homestand. I don't mute them. I don't know why. I'm just that way. But
it's hard to watch a game on mute. Mm-hmm. This is hard to watch a game on mute.
It is. It's tough to know when to bring your attention up. So I noticed one thing about the Romano. I believe it was his last outing. I think Gary Sanchez possibly was on first base. And yeah, because it was 6-1. And for the first time, Romano threw over to first. And Buck and Tabler are like, why is he throwing over to first? He's not going anywhere. I'm like, guys, have you watched any of the other outings? Literally every guy has been on base, has stolen a base against Romano.
I think it was Judge.
Okay. But still, yeah. He's not really throwing to stop Judge from running. He's throwing to prove that you can't just instantly steal a base off of me because I know how to throw over to first base, by the way, because clearly nothing else had worked up to that point. So that other part of the game was not working for Romano at all. That super involved to bend down to your knees, stand up, etc. was something the Yankees said, oh, we can run wild on this.
Well, what was really bad about it was he would do this thing where he'd do his squat, which, like, that's fine. Like, they can't run while you're doing that, because once you get up, you could just step off and throw him out. But he would do squat, set, pitch, squat, set, pitch. No varying in the timing. And he has this really slow windup to begin with, like, because he rocks back on his leg and then goes forward. So if they can just time it when you have that slow delivery to the plate, you have no chance to throw anybody out. And he was just doing that, and they were running wild on him. So he needed to try something.
Yeah, just to break up the clockwork like timing of the runners on position. So maybe he'll get a chance to think about that while he's on the IL. Ross Stripling. You know what? I remember Chatwood is some kind of elbow impingement, but I don't remember what happened to Stripling.
Forearm flexor strain.
Sure. Like, literally all of these things could be rest it for a couple of weeks and see how you feel, or I'm sorry, it's Tommy John. Stripling was not...
was triceps inflammation.
Oh, okay, the back of the arm. Or the upper arm instead of the lower. Yeah, well, so far away from the elbow. Stripling was not doing himself any favors on the mound anyway. So I'm not sure how broken we are up about that, except that these innings need to go to somebody.
Yeah, and when we get to... to some of the moves that they've made. Well, we'll get to more into depth about how they're covering them and how they're not covering them specifically. But yeah, like he wasn't great, but he was, I mean, they need, like you said, they need somebody to pitch. I mean, Anthony Kay starting this game, going into the start of the spring training, so before Pearson and Hatch got hurt, I think Anthony Kay was 10th on the depth chart among starting pitchers to start the year. 10th.
It's April 15th.
Yeah. The injuries have just been wild. I mean, there's people getting injured all over the game right now. It's kind of a problem, but the Jays have right now 10 injured players, not counting Kirby Yates, who were on their 40 man to start the season. So 11, if you count the guy who's out for the entire year.
It's tough to turn 25% of your roster into something when you're doing substitutions. 100%. Yep. And lastly, but certainly not leastly, Teoscar has COVID-19. And is symptomatic.
Yeah, that's obviously the worst part. He actually has the illness as opposed to just testing positive, which is bad enough as it is, obviously. But, you know, this means that his health is at risk, right? I mean, it's not nothing to get COVID.
Yeah, I'm talking about Teoscar, the person. I'm not worried about, we'll talk about the player in a second. But I feel really bad for him. Now, apparently it was some contact outside the team.
Yep.
It was confirmed as a positive. They isolated Teoscar before he showed any symptoms. And then a day or two later, he both tested positive and began to experience symptoms, to my understanding. So the full 14 days of isolation and then has to be symptom free and then has to have whatever it is, two negative tests in a certain period of time before he's even allowed to contemplate coming back onto the roster.
Yeah, it's 10 days in the baseball protocols, but yes.
Well, sorry, but he had already been, it was 10 more days from whenever he went on the IL, I thought. He'd already been in isolation.
Wanted to clear that up. No, but it's like 10 days under the COVID protocol from the positive test.
Oh, okay. Fair enough. Yeah. But yeah, so he's out. And hopefully he doesn't have severe symptoms and he can come back, at the shorter end of that period. But it's possible, even if everything goes well, it could still be another week beyond that before Teoscar Hernandez can get back in the uniform.
And then obviously the bigger worry is that there's lasting symptoms. I mean, we saw some guys last year, like Yoan Moncada said that he didn't feel right all year. Now, it was only the year was 2 months, but it took the season ending for him to be able to really recover from it. I mean, obviously, like myocarditis for Eduardo Rodriguez is different. That was a severe case. But, Freddie Freeman had horrible symptoms and then he came back and won the MVP. So you never really know how it's going to affect somebody in the long term. You just hope that it doesn't.
Exactly. So we're holding our breath on that one. In a way, maybe more than some of the pitchers, because COVID is just weight. There's no magic bullet here or surgery or, rehabilitation program that we know that works. So that's the bad news. Maybe a little good news. We'll sprinkle in the Vladimir Guerrero and Bo Bichette show. I like this. These guys can stay in my infield all year, as far as I'm concerned. Maybe for many years.
Yeah. These are the guys that were supposed to lead this wave, and they're doing it.
Yeah, and April or no April, it's two multi-home run games from Bichette, I believe. It's hits all over the place, lots of extra base hits. And then from Vlad, that opposite field approach, we've seen another week of him just hammering away at pitches in situations that are difficult. I think he had a 525 OBP this season with after two strikes.
Yeah, that's ridiculous.
Yeah, it's like even great hitters tend to have trouble at that point, unless you're Joey Votto or whatever. It's like, well, if he really has his head wrapped around how pitchers are approaching him and how he doesn't have a hole in his swing right now, and he can take the walks happily, which he has taken a bunch of. His walks and strikeouts were basically even last time I checked.
They still are.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. Everything about Vlad right now is ridiculous.
Yeah, and he's got as many balls hit at 110 miles an hour as he had all of last year.
And he has more of those than anybody else in the league.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I was wrong. He had 12 last year, but he has 9 now, and no one else has more than 6. And he's just he's swinging and missing, actually. This is the interesting part. At a rate that we've never seen from him before. And, like, one thing that Vlad has always done is make contact. If he starts making more contact with what he's doing everywhere else, he's going to have just stupid numbers.
I feel like he really has consciously sold out to the power and the launch angle adjustment, you know, the plane swing plane. I'll call it a swing plane adjustment, maybe not a launch angle adjustment, in the early part of the at bat. Like, he swings right out of his heels when he or when he's ahead in the count, when he knows what he wants to hit and sees it coming. And he's been fooled a few times on that. But when it comes down to two strikes, it looks to me like he can shift that approach. And that is, it has to be one of the toughest things to do as a hitter, is to readjust to a pitcher who's already beat you and fooled you and go, okay, no, you're not going to fool me again. And I'm going to put the bat on the ball, or I'm going to wait you out for the walk one way or the other.
Yeah. And the other crazy thing, he's only got 4 extra base hits so far, 2 home runs and 2 doubles. We know that's going to go up. Like, he's hitting the ball so hard, but he's hitting it like right up the middle, right at the center fielder or, you know, whatever, or over the center field fence when it's a home run. But, you know, he's going to start finding gaps with some of these rockets, and those numbers are just going to go up and up and up. Now, he's not going to hit 390. Like, that's he's not going to hit 390 with an on base percentage of 519, but his ISO is under 200 right now, and that's not going to stay like that all season.
No, I mean, his average is, you know, over the course of the season, probably going to drop 100 points, but I can see his ISO going up by 100 points. So, you know, the bases will be there. It just might not be quite as often. But again, I'm impressed by his ability to work the count and not be intimidated. Because I felt like that's what I was expecting when he first came up, was a guy who was not intimidated to be hitting with 2 strikes. And over again, I found someone who was sort of back on their heels with 2 strikes. And I was like, well, that's weird. That's not how he was advertised as a hitter. And now it's like, oh, this is the guy. This is the Miguel Cabrera attitude of, all right, you fooled me once. Now, try it again. Go ahead.
Yeah. He just looks awesome. He looks like the guy we were promised. I mean, that's no other way to put it.
Yeah, and you can tell the whole thing on, like, I'm on Reddit now and again about, you know, with highlights and everything, and people are from other teams are just like, this guy's a superstar. It's not just Blue Jays fans who are turned on to him at this point. Like, it's impossible to deny.
Yeah, I mean, okay. The guy's numbers are stupid.
Yeah. Well, the funny thing is, he's got like a 525, 516 OBP or whatever, and it's like, oh yeah, that's fourth in the league. Like, there's 3 people ahead of him still. I mean, one of those people's Mike Trout, but still, it's crazy. Vlad and Bo on the defensive side. Everybody's making fun of Vlad for the number of times he does the splits. I blame everybody else in the infield.
Yeah. Kevin Biggio does not have the arm for third base, and looks like he just missed a tag on a stolen base attempt when the ball beat the guy easily. Oh, the lace of his glove got the guy, so he's out. But he doesn't have the arm for third. I mean, he's bounced so many throws, and Vlad has bailed him out, and he made a couple great plays in that Yankee series. One of them on that play we were talking about where Merriweather got injured. The throw from the catcher came to Vlad, and he whirled and fired a rocket to second base with, like, no look. He just caught it, spun in through, and made the play. And then he made another one on a double play ball, and he's just looking so much more comfortable over there.
Yeah, he ended the game on a complete split. And, you know, the first couple of days, it was clear that keeping his foot on the bag was something that he was still working on, more or less, like getting oriented to, you know, in the game, making sure that stretch didn't take him off the bag. But he did dead full splits, which is amazing to me in so many ways, because I've never been able to do that in my life. But he knew that they had got the runner. And the expression on his face was like, I guess I'll just stay down here in the splits until you review the replay. I don't know what else I'm supposed to do. He looked just so pleased with himself. Yeah, and that stretch in that case managed to get the out. There's been other times when the pitcher has given him a bad feed, and he's, you know, he's attacked the ball enough to get the out when the runner's bearing down on him. There's just a bunch of different situations where Vlad's been great. Bo, on the other hand, is better when he doesn't think about it.
Defensively, you mean?
Yeah, the longer Bo has to do what he needs to do, the higher and higher the chance goes that he's going to miss his target.
I mean, it's true. He's when he just catches it and fires it, he's been a lot better. I don't think that's, you know, I don't think he's got the yips. I don't think that's something that's going to continue. I think it was just like he made some early errors and sort of just got a little nervous. And I think that as he's, you know, he hasn't made any misplays. He made some great plays, in fact, over that Yankees series. So I think as he just starts to feel more comfortable with himself, that's going to stop. But on the offensive side, the Jays have four walk-off home runs all time against the Yankees, and he's got two of them.
Yeah. In a very, very short span of time.
Yeah, and like he's over 1,000 OPS now on the season. You know, it's 50-some-odd handful, you know, 50-ish plate appearances for him and Vlad. So like, the numbers themselves are not that meaningful, but he's just on fire right now, and he's showing that power the other way that we talked about a couple weeks ago. Both of his home runs were to the opposite field. And like, if you can do that, then it's just hard to pitch to you. It's just that simple.
Yeah. And again, not unlike Vlad, the extra base hits come easy for Bo. You know, he finds gaps. He has, you know, the extra couple steps. Oh, by the way, Vlad has the most improved sprint speed of any runner in MLB right now. Like
by over 2 feet per second. average. He's a league average runner right now.
Yeah. And I mean, that's super good, because in my estimation, he is a good base runner on the thinking side of base running. So being average and a good thinker is way better than being average and you know what I'm trying to say, below average and a good thinker. Those extra couple steps are going to help him everywhere. I think we have to talk about the rest of the offense, though.
Yeah. Grichuk has still been okay, and Palacios, who gets called up, he's been quite solid. Everybody else sucks. Like, I'm not saying they suck as talent-wise, but the performance has just been putrid. I mean, the Jays as a team, and this is with two guys who have
1,000-plus OPS.
Right. As a team, their OPS is 699. And with runners in scoring position, it's 571 with a 206 batting average. They're just not getting it done.
Includes a game where they scored 15 runs.
Yeah. Which somehow they did without hitting any home runs, which is really impressive. The strikeouts are up, the walks are down, you know, and that's the wrong, you know, everyone's strikeouts are up. Like, that's just the nature of the game right now. But the walks being down is the problem. If you're not going to get hits, which they're not, and you're not going to hit home runs, which they're doing sometimes, you better walk. And it's just not happening for most of them. And, you know, like, some of them will turn it around. Like, Lourdes looks lost right now, and there's no reason to expect that that's going to continue.
I think especially with Lourdes, because we have seen the streaks of nothing before, and then it literally turns itself on its head, because that's just the kind of hitter Lourdes Gurriel seems to be.
Yeah, and he's also swinging and missing at pitches that he doesn't swing and miss at, and looking bad doing. I think he's just off. Needs a day or two to just, you know, turn things around.
As Pat and Buck would say, he needs a blow. And I would be like, no, that's not what you say.
Yeah. The guy who's a little interesting is Semien, because he's got the four home runs, but that's kind of it.
Yeah. That's papering over all of the other, you know, the strikeouts. If you want to talk about strikeouts up, and I don't look at any actual numbers, other than maybe Rowdy Tellez, Marcus Semien is my first candidate for the strikeouts are up.
Yeah, I mean, he leads the team in strikeouts, tied with Kevin Biggio, who's also striking out a ton. And he's popping it up a lot when he's not striking out. He's just not hitting well. And he can be better than this. We've seen him be better than this, even in his bad years. But, I don't know. Like, it's just this team has a lot of guys who will go cold. Even when healthy, you know, Teoscar, Rowdy, the catchers, Grichuk eventually will go cold. I mean, we just know that's going to happen. the only guys you really feel confident will not go cold for stretches are Springer when he's healthy, Vlad and Bo. But just all those other guys are cold at the exact same time.
Yeah, and I would, I don't know. I feel like if hitting was as contagious as some commentators claim, that at least, you know, one or two more guys in the lineup would have kind of picked up on the, hey, if you could just get on base here, if you could just, you know, squeak out a walk, that when it comes around to Vlad, he will drive you in. Give him a chance. But it has not happened yet. Rowdy Tellez, I mean, an actual hit and then an actual home run on consecutive days, his first two hits of the season. That maybe saved him. Well, Teoscar Hernandez is what saved him from leaving this team prematurely.
It would be not being healthy yet.
Well, yes. Yeah, in the long run. Springer. Everything hinges on what slot Springer takes up. Palacios, I was really happy for. Four hits in his debut?
Second game.
Four hits. Hey. And then I don't think he's had two since, but well.
He's got six hits. Yeah. Actually, he had one in his debut and then one after that. But he's also walked a couple times. You know, he's 6 for 16.
Not horrible. You
know, so like with two walks and he's been hit by two pitches. Like that's fine. The corner outfield defense is kind of oh boy. Palacios just didn't catch a ball against the Yankees that landed on the warning track. He thought it was gone or something. I don't know. And then in this Kansas City game, Gurriel completely misread a ball that turned a single into an RBI double. And he's looked really shaky in the outfield too, actually. So things that they're 6-6,
you know? Yeah. I'm not going badly, mad.
So that's good.
Yeah. I'm not mad. If you can go 6-6 while everything's on fire, I mean, hey, if things turn around, you could definitely put a winning streak in there like the Red Sox. And I think largely that goes into what the next, you know, point on the list here is Steven Matz and Ryu are looking good. It's what we saw in spring training from Matz. It's what we were counting on from the big contract from Ryu. And I'll throw Robbie Ray's return in there as another high point. Is that was exactly what the kind of velocity Robbie Ray was supposed to have, the slight lack of control Robbie Ray sometimes comes with, but it didn't really hurt him because even though he walked, I think, three, but they couldn't really put a lot together against him because that's Robbie Ray. He misses bats. I don't know. I could go with those three guys. The problem is the other two, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And this is kind of, well, we weren't sure on Matz because, you know, I thought he was going to be fine. I didn't think he was going to be this good. Obviously, it's still early. He's only made two starts, but he looks really good. And they tweaked his pitch mix a bit. So he uses the changeup more often and the cutter and less of the curveball. And it's obviously working. You know, but like we thought, or at least I did, I shouldn't say we, that Ryu, Pearson, and Ray was going to be a really good 1-2-3. And that Matz would be fine as a 4-5, but the upside was iffy. If Matz can keep doing this and Pearson's going to be back in 3 weeks or whatever it is, that's a good 1-4. It's just who else is going to pitch the various innings that are going to be required is still to be answered.
Yeah. I mean, is Anthony Kay going to be your answer for more than one start? Clearly the team does not think Tanner Roark is an answer for anything anymore, except mop-up duty.
This baffled me. Like, okay, I get, you know, you want to remove him from the rotation because he's not pitching very well. But when Ross Stripling got scratched from the start in the series finale against the Yankees and Zoik had to pitch, that meant that the first game, the one that's on while we're recording this against the Royals, didn't have a starter. If you can't trust Roark to spot start against the Royals, why is he on the roster? Like, if he can't do that, he's useless. Like, cause like his only value is being able to do something like that. He's not like he's a guy who's going to pitch well in leverage out of the bullpen. And they already have long relievers in Malone and Thornton. So I don't like, why is he here?
Yeah. Is he here because he's only going to pitch when you're already way behind. And if you get more behinder, it won't bother anybody. Well, that's totally useless.
But that's also Tommy Malone's there for that. So, you know, okay. I get at least for the moment, keeping him, because literally everyone else is injured. So if someone else gets injured, you need someone to start. But when someone comes back, like if Pearson gets back or Stripling, I think Rourke has to go. I think there's just no point in him being in this role.
No, I don't either. I mean, and that's not even because I don't like Rourke. It just seems like he's taking up a roster spot that you just not necessary, like you said. So, how the mighty have fallen. So there really is TJ Zoik the fifth starter the next time this comes around?
He's in the rotation right now. Right now, the rotation is Ryu. It's Mats. Yeah, Mats, Ray, Ryu. I'm just thinking the order that people are going to pitch.
Zoik.
Mats, Ray, so it goes Mats, Kay. Ray, Zoik, Ryu, and then Anthony Kay is still currently in that fifth spot, but they don't need a fifth starter for a while. So it's probably just those four guys until someone gets back.
I feel bad for Zoik that he got put up against the Yankees twice.
Yeah, he did. Well, he did really well the first time.
Yes. Yes.
And the second time he deserved better. Like if Palacios catches that ball, it's the only two runs he gives up are the two home runs to Aaron Judge. So I think he's earned another start.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, above and beyond the whole there is nobody else to start for him thing. So we need to probably talk about the new faces then. We mentioned Anthony Kay like five times. What is Anthony Kay's pedigree for those of us who are not as familiar out there in podcast land with Anthony Kay?
I mean, he's a former first round pick. He was one of the guys that was traded for Marcus Stroman. And to me, he was the better piece than Semien Woods-Richardson. He's a left-handed starter who has decent stuff. His issue is a bit, he doesn't control the zone as well as he was thought to. When he throws strikes, he's quite good. And when he doesn't, he's not, which is a back of the rotation starter. So he's fine in this role. It's just, you know, it's just a little earlier than I thought it would be for him.
Yeah, and the more you pitch, the more chance you have of getting hurt. Josh Palacios. So we discussed he had a four-hit game. You were saying you're not sure about his ability to play the outfield, as evidenced by the early going here. Can he run? I can't figure that out.
Well, he's not a burner. You know, he's not like...
He's not Jonathan Davis. Build.
No, you look at his build. He looks like he would be fast, but he's... average-ish, a little above average speed, but he's not a guy who's a base stealing threat or anything like that. And you're not going to stick him in center field. He can play right field okay. He just has a habit of every now and then just completely misplaying a ball, which I've seen, which sounds a lot like the guy he's replacing.
Without
now, Jay Oscar has better tools than Palacios, I think. Right. You know, just in terms of the raw speed and the arm strength, but I think he's going to be fine there, but just not good.
Joel Payamps, who the Blue Jays have tried very hard to keep and then keep kicking off the roster into the nether area of the minor league / taxi squad / whatever you call it these days. But he's back.
He's back. And he's fine. Yeah, so here's the thing about this bullpen. Well, we'll get to the next guy, then I'll say it. So Payamps, as the last reliever, he's fine.
Anthony Castro! Not to be confused with the Castro that they traded. I had to look that up. I was like, I know they traded a Castro for Troy Tulowitzki. Yeah, Miguel Castro, who threw very, very hard. I believe Anthony also throws very hard, does he not?
96, 97.
Yeah, that's pretty hard. Hard enough. There you go. You filled out the bullpen again with a seemingly lottery pick of dudes that you have in reserve. So what is your statement on this bullpen?
Well, I just want to talk about Castro quickly. The issue with Castro has always been whether he can throw enough strikes. And I mentioned that he had like a ridiculous strikeout to walk ratio in the spring training, but he was facing like average of A-ball type players. In his outing against the Yankees, he threw, 15 strikes in 19 pitches. And I think he started with 7 strikes in a row, fastball slider. And that, if he can do that, then he's going to be a useful member of the bullpen. But so we've talked about this bullpen a few times and how good it could be. right now, it's not Merriweather, Romano, Baraki, Phelps, Dolis, Meza.
Phelps got hit in the back, but he has not gone on the IL, right?
But he's still day-to-day. But, okay, so it's Dolis is the closer. Baraki's in there. Phelps might be. Meza's still there. And then it's Thornton, Payamps, Castro, Malone, Rourke. This is not what we thought we were getting. And it's like they're really going to be weathering the storm for a little bit.
And shockingly, it really has not been the bullpen imploding after a starter handed over a big lead to them that's been the problem up to this point, despite all of this.
Yeah. And we'll see how it goes going forward. Now, because as we mentioned, like Cashier looked great. Meza has looked fantastic. I mean, his sinker against the Yankees in that ninth inning was just unbelievable. I remember I joked about it's like there's no one has a Zach Britton sinker except Zach Britton. It's close. Like, my goodness. Like, so that double play you were talking about where Vlad did the splits after Bo threw it from his seat. I was watching the replay of that and just watching the pitch because it dove down and in. And I was just like, oh, where did this come from? But so there's still some talent there. It's just guys without track records.
Yeah, we're going to need a little magic pixie dust to get it through. And it looks like we've got some of it out there in the bullpen more than anywhere else. Do we have questions from the people? Because we can come back and answer them.
We have lots.
All right, we're going to take a breather. We're going to come back, answer your questions, and going to hand out one star of gold. We'll be back. Yes, a quick breather, and we are back. And because we are back, I get to press the button that does the questions thingy.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
I will not repeat the question. I will read the question from Marx Beherle at Trillimo Peña, who says, not sure when you're recording next. Right now, as it turns out. but here's a question. As of the time of recording, who is the best Blue Jay? Who's the most valuable Blue Jay? Who's the most important Blue Jay? And are they the same or different players? Wow, let's get semantic, Josh.
So I'm going to start with the most important one.
Mm-hmm.
It's Hyunjin Ryu.
Yep. I concur. This is like a ship without a captain without Hyunjin Ryu.
Yeah. I mean, if everyone was healthy, I might say Vlad, but it's Ryu. No, I wouldn't say Vlad. It's Ryu. They need that just reliable, comfortable ace. What were the other ones?
The best Blue Jay? I nominate Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for best Blue Jay.
Yeah, I think it's strong case. It's either him or Ryu, and I think I'll go with Vlad, just at least so far. And then the last one was
the most valuable.
Most valuable. I'm not sure that's different from most important or best. I mean, I think that's kind of redundant from one of the three.
Yeah, I think Hyunjin Ryu is right now the most valuable Blue Jay because of that 7 innings of no, you're not touching him every 5 days. It was funny to see Garrett Cole go out there and make the Blue Jays look stupid, and then the next day Hyunjin Ryu is like, oh, I can do that too, no problem. Makes the Yankees look stupid.
By the way, there was this whole thing about Ryu can't pitch against the Yankees. He struggles against the Yankees. So far this year, he has 12 innings of 2 runs, earned runs allowed, and then he shut them down his last outing last year. I think he can pitch against the Yankees.
Yeah, this is not your father's Hyunjin Ryu. All right. 1, 2, 3, give me AZ. I presume that's a vaccine request, not cheering for the Diamondbacks. Leslie _ nope. My question is a follow-up. Do you think the Jays need to settle on a closer sooner rather than later, or focus more on situational closing? Well,
yeah, this is a follow-up. For some reason, these went out of order.
Oh.
The original question was from Brendan Kuhn. Is there anything to take away from Romano looking a little shaky? Well, we know now, so we don't need to go into that.
Also, thank you for the congratulations, Brendan, on the 200. To the follow-up question, I do not think the Jays need to anoint a closer, especially considering all of what has gone down in the last week regarding injuries.
Yeah, so this was asked obviously before Romano was announced, but even if everyone were healthy, I don't think that they should do that. I think they should use them the way that they were. You know, if Romano is obviously, this is assuming people are performing as expected, but I like the idea of Merriweather being able to pitch to, you know, five outs if need be, and Romano being able to be trusted to be a fireman against the middle of a lineup. And whenever that situation arises and you need those guys, just turn to them. Having that flexibility is a good thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think we've said it before, and I don't think it's changed. I think if anything, the injuries have magnified that. Incoherent Screaming at Split Letters asks, first says, congrats, dudes. Again, thank you. Here's the question. Were we all wrong to assume the Yankees were going to run away with the AL East? Like, they look good, but not the dominant force of years past. Josh?
I don't think so. I think the Yankees are going to be very good. Some of their guys haven't gotten going yet, just like the Blue Jays. Like, that's like, you know, making assessments about the Blue Jays offense this early in the season and what they're going to be the rest of the way. The Yankees have a lot of really, really good players. And Luke Voit is coming back in like a week. So I still think that they are the team to beat, even if the pitching, though their pitching looks shaky, right? Kluber looks bad and Tyone looks hittable. But Severino's on his way back. They've got Davey Garcia coming back, coming up. I just think they're still the best team.
I don't think it's out of the realm of possibilities that the Yankees make a move early if they don't think Kluber and Taillon between them can fill a rotation slot. You know, if there's somewhere to get better pitching, the Yankees will go and find it. And yeah, I think right now it's just April. I wish I could say the Yankees were done, but I will not say that at all. Matt Sweeby at Blue Jay Matt, congratulations on the 200. Thank you, Matt. What are we all going to be talking about in another 200 episodes time?
So 200 episodes time, that's what, 4 years from now?
I thought it was, what are we still going to be talking about in 200 episodes time? Because I was just going to say strikeouts. But what are we all going to be talking about?
Depending free agency of like Junior?
Yeah. Oh, thanks. Thanks for bringing us down there. The Hall of Fame track of Bo Bichette. Well, we're going to be talking about, I bet you we're reminiscing about a different Blue Jays playoff appearance in 200 episodes. We're not going to be talking about 2015, 2016 anymore.
I like that. No, we won't be reminiscing. We'll be discussing how they're going to be building on their recent playoff appearance.
There you go. Colleen Evans. Thank you, Colleen, for being here for presumably all 200 episodes. It seems that way anyway.
And even going back to before we were this.
Yeah, congrats. No, congratulations on you for being the super fan. What defensive position do you think Kevin Biggio's is best, and that's in quotation marks, Josh, suited to be playing, and what would that look like with this roster, provided you don't think he should be playing third?
Huh. So the problem with this roster is that there's no one else really to play third. Well, I mean, assuming that Vlad is not going to be doing that. I think Vlad is the first baseman now, and that's just the way it is. So I think he has to. If Jordan Groshans or Austin Martin later in the season shows that they're capable of playing third, I think Biggio's ultimate role is going to be as a utility who gives off days to – he plays six out of every 7 days, and he just gives an off day to a different player every day. And I just think that's where he's going to profile best. Cause unless they, you know, like if Semien's gone, he'll move back to second base. But I just think that's where he's best suited.
You spread out his defensive indifferences as far as possible is what you're saying.
Yeah.
All right. So we have a chart, and who doesn't love a good chart? So for those of you on Twitter, it was Mark Spurley at Trilly Mopena who in honor of the anniversary, searched on Fangraphs, 18 players with batting averages of 200 or lower and at least 100 plate appearances with the Jays. Who are our favorites? Miguel Montero. I did not know he had 200 plate appearances. Well, he doesn't have the years on here. Ron Shepard.
That says 100 plate appearances.
Sorry, 100 plate appearances. Ron Shepard, Jason Nix. I remember when Jason Nix was supposed to be a big shot in the arm. Kevin Cash. Joe Cannon, Derek Fisher, Brian Simmons, Joe Lawrence, not the singer, Jonathan Davis, oops, Bob Davis, right beside him, that's fun, Luke Maley, Mike McCoy, Rene Gonzalez, Brian McCray. Is it that Brian McCray? Did he really have 100 plate appearances with the Blue Jays?
He did.
Melvin Upton Jr., also known as BJ Upton when he felt like it. Dwayne DeWise, Kenny Williams, and Josh Tolick. Wow. Wow.
Well, I mean, this is a list of guys that with an average under or 200 or under, because Tolley's included. So it was going to be a wow list.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking about like some of these guys. You could see that they could run. I mean, there's a whole bunch of these guys where it's like, oh, they could run. Kenny Williams, Dwayne Wise was he could play defense. I think my favorite there is Mike McCoy. If only for that one season where he spent most of the season traveling around, getting called up and demoted.
Goddamn Mike McCoy. He just always seemed to be back. That era where the Jays just loved their 5'8", no-hit middle infielders. Mike McCoy, Joe England. I think my favorite here, though, I always liked Dwayne Wise. And then I liked him when he made that Mark Burley perfect game saving catch in Chicago. So I got to go with Dwayne Wise.
Fun, weird aside. I work at Rogers. There is a gentleman named Mike McCoy who still works at Rogers. Technically, Mike McCoy was on a Rogers payroll at one point. And he insists that he is no relation and is not the guy who used to play middle infield. But apparently he gets that from most people who meet him at some point.
Funny. It's funny that Mike McCoy is recognizable enough or memorable enough that people say that.
Yeah, exactly. Wow, Derek Fisher really did not have a good run with this team. 37% K rate, the highest among all of the below 200 hitters on that list. Well, thank you, Trillimo. That is a strange but strangely appropriate way for Artificial Turf Wars to honor said anniversary. I am going to hand out a quick but important gold star like this.
I think that's rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a gold star.
You enjoy that. You've earned it.
My gold star goes out to Zach Greinke, a player who I really empathize with, I think, because it's clear that whatever Zach Greinke is doing, he doesn't understand what anybody else is doing out on the baseball field. And I know he walked away from the game because of anxiety at one point, and he came back to it. He even said he liked it without the crowds, which tells you a lot about him. He also is a genius. And I would like to give him credit this week for throwing one pitch. He threw a fastball. He threw it for a strike. And he threw it 51 miles an hour, which I have a lot of sympathy for.
Fastball?
Yeah.
It wasn't his super slow curveball.
No. You can look it up.
I'm going to.
I'm 99% sure that looked like a fastball. It didn't have a big loopy anything on it when I looked it up. We're gonna see how fast Josh can type that in.
Yeah, I'm typing with one hand because I'm holding a microwave. A microwave? Microphone.
Josh is very strong. Oh man. What do you think's going at the front of the podcast? Probably that. Oh man.
I can't tell. Well, it was loopy, but I can't tell if he just lobbed it or.
I'd just like you to know that I, a grown man, if I really put in the effort on one of those radar guns outside the stadium, I can usually get it up to 51 or 52 miles an hour. So my max effort pitch is Zach Greinke trying to make someone look foolish, but with control. That's my gold star.
He has hit 100 miles an hour before. You can't do that hard anymore. So he's got a range on his fastball of 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, that doesn't look like an Ephus pitch, though, does it? It's not your classic try and get the hitter to play, you know, look like he's in a softball game trying to tee off on you.
No.
It just took it. Yeah. Well, yeah, called strike. I think as an umpire, I can imagine that moment where you anticipate the pitch, right? Just like the hitter does. And there must be a moment where the umpire is like, I'm sure it'll get here any time now. What say you for your final thought, sir?
So we've been talking about some of the numbers for these hitters. You want to know who has a 2000 OPS? Pablo Sandoval. He's got 3 home runs. Early back, season, baby. This is no. Back. He's three for 8. Oh. This is just fun with early season numbers. There's a guy with the White Sox, Mercedes, who's hitting over 500 right now.
Yeah, but have you seen how hard that guy hits the ball?
Oh no, he's good. He's gonna have nice numbers when the season ends, but he's not gonna hit 500. I hate the "it's early" comments, but it's early, and we really shouldn't be looking at anybody's numbers yet. The early part of this podcast notwithstanding.
Well, we are also looking at approach and results when we talk about Bowen Blatt. We're not obsessed with the 1,000 OPS. And at some point in the season, if you want to finish up with an 850 or a 900 OPS, you have to be over 1,000 at some point. That it's in the first 2 weeks is great. But, you know, Jose Bautista often would have a stretch where he hit with, you know, 1,100 or 1,200 OPS for 2 weeks or a month, and then he would go and he would hit for, you know, people would find a hole in his swing, or he would make an adjustment and he'd hit 750 and everyone would act like the world was coming down around them. So yeah, it's fine. It's fine. Early season. It's good times. We've had 2 no-hitters this week is my final thought. I don't remember 2 no-hitters in the same week since, like, well, I'm sure it has been. I remember in 1991 that happened. It's hard to squeeze them in together like that. They're so random.
Was it 91 or 1990? When the Jays got no hit?
Was that same day in 1990? There were two no hitters on the same day. It might have been 1990. Dave Stewart and somebody else.
And Fernando Valenzuela.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, super cool. It's nice to see pitchers finishing games and are able to finish games when the no hitter thing comes up. I think a shared no hitter just loses a little bit of that magic.
Here's what's crazy about the Musgrove and Rodon no-hitters. This is originally going to be my final thought, and I forgot because I was carrying the microwave.
carrying a watermelon.
Both of their no-hitters were no walks and a hit batter.
So they called Rodon's one shoelace away from a perfect game. Oh, yeah, and that's the first no-hitter in Padres history, so we can finally get rid of that piece of trivia.
Yeah, it wasn't a shoelace. He hit him in his toe.
Oh, okay.
He threw a slider that the guy didn't move. He just stood there and let it hit him in the toe. And then Rodon's like, oh, did that hurt?
Yeah. If I knew that was going to happen, I would have just drilled you. Oh, man. All right. So that is to say that you have been Joshua Hausam at Joshua Hausam. And I have been Greg Wisniewski at Coolhead 2010. And this has been episode, you guessed it, 200 of the Artificial Turf Wars. And we'll talk at you again next week.